few weeks ago, I talked about the idea of initiating an energy flow, because it became clear to me that our ability to initiate an energy flow was directly related to our ability to create the conditions in our lives that we want. And so now I want to understand why we don't initiate an energy flow when we want to, when we know that that's really the only way to create what it is we want or to bring it into physical manifestation. Why don't we create that energy flow? Why don't we initiate it? I like the idea that the law of cause and effect is always in play, or said in slightly more frequent and common terms, we reap what we sow. If that is always true, then we could say that initiating an energy flow is sowing. It is like planting seeds. It seems to me that we initiate energy flows for two basic reasons, two fundamental reasons, and these are substantiated in the book Christ Returns Reveals Startling Truth. Number one, the reason we initiate energy flows is to bond with something so we can get what we want. The second thing is we initiate energy flows to reject something we don't want. So we do bonding or we do rejecting. Those are the two main impulses that ensure individuality and everything else visible that we see in our universe. And when those are ego-driven, then a different story in that this is what Christ says is the root of all human suffering. When our energy flow is ego-driven, it could mean that what we're doing is only about us and we don't care about anyone else or anything else. Just we want, our egos want us to be satisfied. We want to get what we want. Our own comfort, our own fulfillment of our desires. That's the only thing that counts. And so it's easy to imagine that if that's our mindset, if that's our consciousness, if that is the vibration of our energy field, that when we interact with somebody else, that is when we initiate an energy flow to someone else, it's pretty easy to go, oh, I wonder, I think it's predictable, the reaction of other people. They're going to, on their level, have their rejecting impulse triggered. And if we reap what we sow, as we sow rejection, if we sow grabbing, if we sow selfishness, if we sow this ego-driven, I don't care about you, I only care about me, we're going to reap a particular harvest. So if our energy flow is rejecting, hello, the harvest that we can expect will be rejection. And I think when we get that idea that this is the law of cause and effect, and it has to be that way every time, now, all of a sudden, the rules of the game become clearer to us, and we're in a position to be able to choose our thoughts and our feelings and our actions more carefully, because each of those is the energetic sowing that we're talking about here. I would say that the experiences that each of us have had in our lives, if you just add them all up, make them cumulative, add them, those things as a totality represent our consciousness. If we've got painful memories of rejection, particularly if we were expecting real positive bonding and we got rejection, our ego is going to go, whoa, I know, this is a problem. And the ego is going to tend to put the brakes on our initiating energy flows, except in the most benign circumstances where there's very, very little risk, or the situation is so predictable, so controllable from an ego standpoint that there is virtually no risk at all of us experiencing pain. The trouble with that, of course, is if we're really looking to create stuff in our lives, instead of just repeat things, to create really requires us to initiate energy flows into the unknown, dealing with stuff that we're unfamiliar with, that we haven't done a whole bunch of times before. So there is a lot of uncertainty there. And if our egos say uncertainty is bad news, got to stay away from it, then we're going to tend not to initiate energy flows. Now, you can say this is a makes a lot of sense. It's a good idea. And if we go back in time to when we were primitive cavemen and cavewomen, you say, oh, there's a beautiful dark cave. Let's that'll be a wonderful home. It'll protect us from the elements. Let's go in there. It's like, wait a minute. There's uncertainty in that darkness. We don't know what's in there. And survival instinct, this built-in, designed by the divine, impulse or tendency to protect our survival says, wait, before we go into the unknown, before we go into the dark, before we go into that area of uncertainty, we need to get more information. We need to add light to it in order to see what's back there. And if there's something back there that wants to eat us for lunch, we're going to want to know about that before we walk in. The ego, if it ever experienced, and this is a given, right, that if our egos have ever experienced in our lives us hitting a pothole, and I'm talking metaphorical, you know, some kind of bump in the road, something that was unexpected, something that we didn't want, didn't anticipate, that now all of a sudden our minds go, okay, pothole. Okay, we just experienced a pothole. My job is to protect us. So now, and it starts perceiving potholes in every single path, in every single proposed activity. And you'd go, actually, rather than perceiving the potholes in every possible activity, in every path, in every area that we want to explore, any journey that we want to go on, I would rather have my mind be able to weave through any kind of obstacles or dangerous spots or barriers or challenges or difficulties. If we can weave through that like it's an obstacle course instead of bumping into each of the obstacles, it would be a lot easier. But the mind, ego-driven particularly, says it only knows how to go for what it wants, grab what it wants, and more importantly, the tendency to reject what it doesn't want. So it rejects the obstacles. It literally will find them and fight them. And when they can't be fought, it'll run away from them. And so the obstacles start to drive the life in the realm of the ego and in the realm of our thinking. So now it's the obstacles, it's these perceived threats that cause us to do or not do things, instead of us making a decision of what we want and then taking steps to get there, all of a sudden the obstacles are in control. And you see this all the time with people with addictions or other habits that are problematic, that the habits are in charge and the mind is using these same behaviors over and over and over and over again, trying to satisfy a need. But alcohol doesn't really satisfy a need. Nicotine in the cigarettes and cigars doesn't really satisfy a need. You know, overeating doesn't really satisfy a need. But the mind starts to habituate that stuff, and all of a sudden, we have difficulty breaking free of that because the tendency, the habit, the mind are all controlling our behaviors. And so instead of us being able to initiate a new energy flow in a different direction, more enlightened, more evolved, higher purposed, higher intentioned, we are stuck in that same rut. You can think in terms of this, if we do something one time and it results in pain, that it's a good idea to be able to remember that. That actually enhances our survival. Now, there are a lot of experiences or a lot of examples of this in our current life. For instance, you know, if you get some clothing from the dry cleaner that's recently been cleaned, it comes in a plastic bag. Printed all over that bag is, don't use this in a baby's crib. This is not a plaything. Now, you know that the sentences printed on that bag originated somewhere. Some pothole, horrible, pothole that is some child suffocated because some parent used that in the crib either to protect it from pee or as a toy or wrap the pillow or in it or something, and the child suffocated. Now, broaden this idea that when we have an experience that results in pain, the ego catches hold of that, the mind remembers that, and uses that memory to create a rule of life. Avoid this, fight that, avoid this, fight that, whatever it may be. So basically, bond with this and reject that is what that rule is going to be based in. Now, this idea that creating these rules sounds on the level that is going to enhance our survival, and to a certain extent that may be true. On the other hand, this danger multiplication effect, that is, there's a pothole, there's a saber-tooth tiger, there's a saber-tooth tiger, and it goes on and on. So pretty soon everything is threatening to us. And when we start to perceive through these activity of the mind and our ego that everything is a threat now, in order to protect us, in order for us to survive, we have to reduce our area of operation. We have to reduce what we can initiate our energy flows to. And so now we become prisoners of these creations, and literally we limit what we can express in terms of our energy, potential, and our goodness. This idea occurred to me. That it seems to me that an initiated energy flow, we could call, and I've called it this before, and this is not unique to me, we call that initiated energy flow a seed thought. And it seems to me that if you look at that seed thought, right, I'll draw like a little circle, and say that there is content to that seed thought. There's something inside of that shell of the seed. And we could do this with a piece of corn or any kind of seed that's, we would be, yeah, there's something inside of it. But to me, it feels like the seed thought, not only does it have a content within it, but there's some sort of expectation associated with it. It feels like that expectation is the consciousness that anticipates the harvest. Now, I don't know this one way or another to be true or not true, but a piece of corn certainly has the consciousness to grow and to be a piece of corn as compared to a tomato. But does it know that? Does it know that? I don't know. However, if we think in terms of the seed thought that I'm referring to as having content, which is the initial bonding or rejecting desire that we have, and then there's some sort of energetic expectation around it that is going to magnetize some result to it. It almost feels like that is true. The I want what I want energy seems simple enough, doesn't it? But if we have other energies attached to that concept, and we do typically, and I'll just go through some of them, people say I want what I want, but then there's an energy of undeservingness, or there's an energy of scarcity, or guilt or regret related to that want, or embarrassment, or pain, or failure, or any one of the lower emotional states in the 10 emotional states, could be shame, or apathy, or grief, or fear, or lust, or anger, or pride. There could be some kind of energy that's connected to it that we believe to be selfishness. We've been taught that that's bad. Or there could be some sort of energy. And now if you just think this, I want what I want, sounds simple, but when you attach this other expectation, this other associated energy, then it becomes a much more complicated matter. We are electromagnetic. And that means that not only do we try to pull in what we focus on, we do pull in what we focus on. It happens automatically. That, again, is part of the law of cause and effect. We pull in what we put our focus on. So our attention is really sowing. It's how we sow energy. It's how we plant energy. and we are going to have a harvest. If we're pulling in energy of another person, we take that, you know, on any level, whether it's their attention we're demanding or seeking, or their money. If we were robbers, of course, we would be trying to take that energy that is represented by money. And so if we're pulling in the energy of another person and they perceive that our initiated energy flow is actually extractive, we're trying to extract something to them, we're trying to take away, we're being manipulative, or we're being predatory, or we're being controlling, or in some other form diminishing, those people have to, for the sake of their own survival, have to reject our energy. It's built into the system. It's built into bonding, rejecting. If we start to threaten them some way that they perceive to be the diminution of them and their energy, their individuality, their freedom, they will reject us. It has to. The ego-driven mind says this to us: take what I want. If anything threatens to diminish me or what I have, repel it. That's an operational couple of statements that you go, oh, that's how the ego is perceiving things. Yep. Take what we want, sometimes with total disregard for other people or other things. Look at wars and look at what we've been doing to the environment. You can clearly say we're not caring very much about other people in other countries, and we're not caring very much about Mother Earth. We're taking what we want without regard to anything else. And when people resist that, people go, whoa, 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 that's not okay. That's not okay to do that. In those countries, or environmentalists, or anybody else who's, you know, on the side of common sense, there's a tremendous amount of rejection that goes along with that. If that is our philosophy, if that's the way we're going to be playing the game of life energetically, take what we want without regard to anybody else, and if anything threatens to diminish me or what I have, repel it, that we're going to run into a whole bunch of difficulty. If we could only grasp this idea, other people don't really have what we want. That comparing them to us or us to them, which very often results in either pain and jealousy or discomfort and pride, if we distort it through our egos to make them less than us in our estimation, or if we make them more than us in our estimation, if we realize that they don't have what we really want, then we could actually consider there might be a source of what we really want. What would that be? I would say the source of what we want, and I would make those all capital letters, capital S, capital W, capital W, capital W. The source of what we want is really the source of all that is. Other people, just like us, are trying to grow an awareness that divine consciousness has everything we want. That's the whole point of Christ Returns. Christ is saying divine consciousness has everything that we want, and in fact is trying to provide it to us if we would just become aware of it. All we have to do is to become aware of how to contact the divine with our thoughts and feelings by reaching out to it. And I'm thinking reaching out with heartfelt, highest intention of knowingness, so we can know and understand and experience the divine. We'll know that we are now connected to the source of what we want, which is the source of all that is. If we could get that idea, that when we recognize that the divine has everything that we could possibly want, we're going to stop listening to the ego mind that is driving us to steal our neighbor's resources, kill them, or imprison them, or all the other machinations of humankind that we see every day if we were to read the newspapers or listen to the 6 o'clock news. This stuff is going on all the time because people are listening to that ego-driven mind telling them what to do. But if we individually could become more aware of the truth of this whole thing, we now all of a sudden, the divine has it, not some other person, some other country, some other company, some other political party, some other whatever. You know, the United States considers itself a Christian nation. We hear that all the time. We're a Christian nation. We're a Christian nation. But you'd think that we would recognize that God works for us, in us, and through us. But instead, older men sacrifice the lives of younger men in order to egoically grow their own power, their wealth, and their influence. This sending younger men to battle to gain power and influence and resources for older men has been around since the beginning of humanity. And you go, wait a minute, why are they doing that? They're doing that because they're looking to bond with what they want, and they want to get rid of anything that could threaten their power. Well, who's going to threaten the power of older men, younger men? Who's going to threaten the power of men generally, other men and women? And it's like, so that's what a lot of this diminishment of people is all about. And we repel other people so they can't take what we've egotistically grabbed over the course of our lives. Yep, that is true. So what's the answer to the question? Why wouldn't we initiate an energy flow? It's because we're afraid of our motivations, our intentions are going to bring a harvest of rejection. In order to protect ourselves, we hold back on that energy flow. People, children, animals are very aware of intentions. This is an idea that's been around for a very, very long time. You know, it's your vibrations speak so loudly, I can't hear your words. People can tell when somebody else is interacting with them, whether they're manipulative or predatory or dishonest or insincere and so on. With a little teeny, teeny, teeny bit of awareness, people can recognize that. You see it in little children. Children will back away from somebody. You know, you say, wow, you should go over to that person and give them a hug. And that child is like all about backpedaling. Why? That child is picking up on energy. Animals are the same way. They will perceive a threat in somebody and either back away from that person or become aggressive with that person. Most people can do that. And if we are aware of our own intentions and motivations and we're trying to disguise them when we initiate an energy flow, it's going to be noticeable by other people. And so it is a fear of them noticing what we're really up to. It's our fear of them noticing our lower intentions, lower vibration intentions. It is our fear of them rejecting us because they can discover this not high vibration us that we're trying to cover up. So what's the solution to this problem? I call it a problem because energy has got to move. Energy has got to move. And blocked energy is unhealthy. There, you look around and you will see that primarily every disease that you can discover or name or they've been making up is based upon blocked energy and rejection. Every single one. So what has to happen is energy has to move. So the solution to this problem of not initiating an energy flow is something that's generally going to be outside the frame of reference for the average ego-driven human consciousness. The solution is to give, not grab, not repel, to give. Now it's like, wait a minute. Think about it for a second. A higher level awareness person knows that when they give, they are acting in harmony with divine intention. Divine consciousness intention is to work for us, in us, and through us. So by giving, we aren't really giving what's ours. We are giving what came from the divine in the first place. The ego will say, no, 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 we got to hold on to it. We got to hold on to it. We can't lose it. We can't be diminished. We got to hold on to it. We got to get more. We got to get more. But a higher level consciousness goes, that came from the divine. There's an infinite amount of everything in the divine. All I have to do is call it forward. I just call it forth into my life. I'm not losing anything. And in fact, in that process, I'm gaining it. So if you could grab hold of a couple of ideas, like, who are we? What are we? I say, we're the directors of energy flow. We're the conduits of the divine. We're the distributors of energy. We're the ones planting seed thoughts in divine soil, and those seed thoughts are going to produce an abundant harvest. And you go, okay. Pays to pay attention to the type of seed thoughts, the content, and the expectation energy that is connected to this. And giving is a whole different ball game than grabbing or repelling. A high-level consciousness person who knows that besides the immediate good feelings of giving, you give something, you do something nice for somebody else or for an animal or for anything, you tidy up an area, there are immediate good feelings that are being harvested in that activity. But besides that, when we sow seeds of giving, the long-term prospects of harvesting are all the more joy-filled. Just go, wow, this feels good in the middle of the process of sowing, and I know that there's even more joy coming down the road in the harvest. How great. Let me do it again. Let me give more. On a practical level, how do we give? How do we give? Any energy flow that we initiate that is sincerely intended to enhance another person is effective as giving. From a smile, to a hello, to a touch, to respectful listening, that's tremendous. Tremendous gift, listening to someone, to patient attention that we put on them, to a supportive, cooperative, physical effort to help them with something, financial support, like a donation or contribution, to any other form of contribution of energy to another person's experience of the truth of existence. Anything that we can do to facilitate another person's growth, nutrition and nourishment, healing, protection, the fulfillment of a need, work, survival, rhythm, all within a system of spiritual law and order, is giving. Give energy to enhance another person, and God will be working for you, in you, and through you. And that is really got to be the reason we're all here in the first place, to grow in our understanding and our connection to the divine. And if we're giving the divine, we've got to be connected to the divine on the one hand and connected to some other creation of the divine on the other, some other person, some other thing, some other animal, some other visible object in the universe. When we're connected, when we're the conduit, when we're the middle person between the divine and the recipient, and divine is working through us for that, we are giving to the recipient and to ourselves. And then we'll be much more willing to initiate an energy flow when we're willing to give instead of grab or repel. I'd like to end the service with a prayer. This is the pluralized version of the prayer from Letter 8 of Christ Returns Reveals Startling Truth. Father, Mother, Life, you are our life, our constant support, our health, our protection, our perfect fulfillment of every need, and our highest inspiration. We ask you to reveal the true reality of yourself to us. We know it is your will that we should be fully illumined, that we may better receive awareness of your presence within and around us. We believe and know that this is possible. We believe that you protect and maintain us within perfect love. We know that our eventual purpose is to express you. As we speak to you, we know you are perfectly receptive of us, for you are universal loving intelligence, which has so marvelously designed this world and brought it into visible form. We know that as we ask you to speak to us, we are sending out a consciousness searchlight into your divine consciousness, and as we listen, you will be penetrating our human consciousness and coming ever closer to our increasingly receptive minds and hearts. We commit ourselves and our lives into your care. Thank you. It is so. Amen.